The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa. Whatever he never says that. Here we go. Valentino Rossi had a good start as well.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 329 for Wednesday, the 25th of July, 2012. My name is Jim Race. I am in Northern California, a little bit further away from Jules. He's down there in the Bay Area. I'm up in the foothills. How you doing, Jules?
Doing good.
Excellent. Excellent. It was a quietish weekend if you don't include some pretty great racing out of Brno. Now, I do have to say off the bat that I haven't had a real good chance to watch all of this, so you're going to carry a bit of that for us. But in the meantime, there's a bunch of stuff going on, and you and I, my friend, are going to be busting out of here in a couple of days and heading to Laguna Seca for MotoGP.
Yep, and that's why we're recording this show actually on a Monday night, and so a lot of news that might happen between now and Wednesday will not be in this show.
Right. But in the meantime, we do have some tidbits, and there's been a few things coming out, and we'll touch on those as we zip through the show. Do have a couple of very, very cool folks this week, donators to the show, both Richard Glover and Doug Edmiston. Doug, congratulations, by the way. Thank you very much. If you'd like to donate to the show and help us get out to the races, you can always do so through the Facebook fan page at facebook.com/motopod. I keep trying to do that, don't I, Jules? We should make a motopod.com/facebook just so that if I screw it up, it'll redirect. Yeah, I'm telling you. You can do it through motopodcast.com or any way you'd like to. But again, many thanks. It helps us out. Lets us do things like buy stickers to give away this coming weekend because we're going to have a meetup there, aren't we, Jules?
We are. We are. And to all you guys out there. There.
Yes. Well, I suppose I should partake. I'm not going to save this for the end of the show. And since we're in higher fidelity these days.
Ooh.
You like that?
Yeah. Stereo.
I think I got my mic wet.
careful.
You do have some errata that actually involves some meetup stuff, so why don't you walk through that, Jules?
Yeah, I didn't mention that we actually tried to get together with Graham Barton, who I met at Aragon last year.
Yep.
At Mugello, and I found out the hard way that it's actually Mugello is very strange because they when you buy a paddock pass, for example, which you can, it's expensive, but you can get a paddock pass, you only get access to the paddock and one very specific grandstand in that one area, and there's fences and stuff like that. And Graham had a pass for the main central grandstand, the Centrale Tribuna, and he could only basically hang around that area. And it turned out that me with the media pass, I had and the photographer's pass, I was able to go on these access roads, but there's all this fencing with barbed wire on it, on top of it. And basically there was no way for me to actually enter that area where the ticket holders were. And I talked to some security guards and they were like, oh no, you're not allowed to go there. You have to buy a ticket. I'm like, what?
You should have taken a photo of him like through three layers of fencing.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been fun. And I was actually thinking later that what I really should have done is encourage him to come down to the Track Invasion and met. That would have been a great place to meet up. Unfortunately, didn't occur to me until afterwards.
Well, as we learn these things, what we can do is we can have our meetups offsite. I mean, a place like Laguna is very, very open, and we've got that kind of figured out. But you kind of knew going into Mugello, I mean, even before we knew that we were going to be definitely set up to have you go, that it was going to be a little bit tight, huh?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Even if, time-wise was crazy too. I did want to give a shout out to, Stephen English, who, so at T1, I was hanging out and, well, first of all, in the media center, there was a guy that sat next to us, cause he knew David Emmett.
Yeah.
And then he was, same guy was, at T1 during the start of Moto 3 race, and he saw the Motopod sticker on my camera, and he was like, "Are you Jules Cheesick by any chance?" I'm like, Yeah. He's like, "Oh yeah, yeah. I listened to the podcast. He's actually a reporter for a Scottish newspaper, and nice. A photographer for them and a reporter, and he occasionally gets to cover motorsports. So very cool. Very cool dude. And the other meetup happened on the airplane on the flight back, when there was a guy sitting next to me watching me as I was editing the photos. He's like, "Oh, were you at Mugello?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, cool. Yeah, but he was there too." And I told him about the podcast and gave him some stickers and told him to go listen to it. So,
cool. Well, Michael, if you're tuning in, thanks for being a new fan. If you're not, maybe you haven't woken up yet after how exhausted you were. Yeah. And before we continue with Errata, Jules, since we're talking meetup, let's talk about the one we're going to do this weekend, and then we'll continue on.
Yeah. We're going to do the meetup at 4:20 p.m. on Saturday, in the parking lot that's just in front of the ticket office that's inside the Laguna Seca batteries. So it's between T4 and T5, yep. Behind the T4. Well, actually, it's not directly behind the T4's grandstand. It's really behind and further south. But
you're going to confuse people already.
Well, we're going to put a link in the show notes. I know a lot of people listen to this show via iTunes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick it in the description of the MP3.
There you go.
So that you guys can get it even if you don't go to the website. It's just a very short link. And it's a Google Map pointer exactly to the location with the time. Anyway, Saturday 4:20. There is going to be obviously action on track. Superbike's going to be qualifying, but it was really the only time that we could think of that. Because that screwed us at Miller big time.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you might actually get to see surprise guest Christina Sua.
There you go. For the pressure. For the pressure.
Yeah, I'm telling you got to keep it on. Continue on, because this was you last week, and I was kind of chuckling at the rest of your errata.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how I got to the call with Martin, because I was completely a zombie. One of the things I mentioned was that there were three different forces security forces at the track to make sure that everything went smoothly during the track invasion, mostly. And I said that it was the local police, the state police, and the military police, but it was actually the military police. And there was also the Corpo Forestale, which are like the Rangers. And they carry some freaking serious firepower, those guys. You know, all of them.
They're probably all race fans too, frankly.
They had cameras, they were checking the racing, and yeah, absolutely
right on. And finally
the big one, which I was just so embarrassed about, and of course a lot of people pointed it out, was that Brad Binder and Danny Webb have the same representation, but they're not on the same team. And I knew that when I was interviewing them, but I didn't. But I introduced the interviews as if they were part of the Mahindra team. But Brad is obviously with the RW Racing, which is why he's not complaining about his engine as much as Danny.
Right. And it was as long as you don't do it in front of them. But then again, you screwed up at that point, and you have a chance to re-record the beginning of the interview.
Well, the thing that sucks about the podcast, it's not like a blog entry where you can quickly go and make it edit. Once it's out, it's out. That's
it doesn't suck. Imagine if we were doing it live, Jules, and then you have absolutely no chance to fix anything.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, I would never be doing it.
I always
suck live.
Nah, I've always said that, dude, we basically do it live when we talk right now. All right. A ton of listener feedback. And we have kind of stepped away a little bit after you guys dealt with it last week from the KC Stoner drama. We've got a whole bunch here. You want to start or you want me to start? What do you think, sir?
Well, we had a good email exchange with Nick Codling about Casey. And I like what he wrote here very much. And he said, it's good to see Danny taking the fight to him. This is, back to Saxon Ring.
Yep.
Casey has very often appeared to be something of a mass tactician and has been great at managing the overall package and has been able to take the win even under difficult circumstances. Danny has perhaps always lacked that ultimate killer edge. I suppose you could say that Casey's biggest weakness is he is prepared to push beyond the limit and perhaps doesn't have so much of an inbuilt safety margin that other riders might maintain. And perhaps that's what has given him the success he's had. It certainly allowed him to do things that no one else has been able to do on the Ducati. Maybe his riding is more about pure guts and courage rather than technical skill.
I think that's a given.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd have to agree. I mean, and even other risers have said the same thing, that when he was riding during his last few seasons on the Desmos Sedici, if he wasn't falling, he was basically crashing his way around the track and still staying on two wheels. So, great observation and agree 99%. Always got to leave a margin, Jules.
Nice.
Chris Gilbert wrote in, and this is something that we're always kind of pondering. With Dorna limiting the manufacturers to 4 bikes each to allow CRT to score points, not sure that's quite the reason, but do you think the Honda customer bike, if it happens, is a way to kill homemade CRTs? 5 or 6 of them would probably mean the rest of the class had little or no chance of scoring points or getting attention for sponsors and effectively make them 4-string bikes. Well, there's a lot of supposition in there.
Right.
And so my response to Chris was, it would be difficult to comment on that which doesn't exist.
Yeah.
They have said that they're going to make a customer RCV 213. Will they?
It doesn't always work out. I mean, look at Mavison at NTTXGP.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
I agree 100%. So we'll kind of have to see what happens when, I do want to remind everybody out there, really, seriously, this is year one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we need to say that pretty much every show.
we're only halfway through. Now, granted, I didn't put any money on it. Maybe we'll have a CRT on the box. Who knows? This year. I would say now that I don't see that happening unless the circumstances were pretty crazy. It was a fun prediction to throw out, but
And you know what? One thing that I gathered is that you were not the only person who had much higher expectations. Mm-hmm. A lot of people around the paddock in Magello were saying the same thing. We're like, kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Well, but I think what's going to happen is, because this is clearly the direction that the series is going in one way or another, at least with the economy as it is right now, that they will either get quicker or faster, or the teams will figure things out. Part of it, though, Jules, is also the economy is hurting these teams as well.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't have the bank to sink into it. I mean, one of the things that Collins obviously been complaining about is that being Colin Edwards on the currently on the Suter BMW, is that the changes and upgrades to the bike that have been promised at the beginning of the season haven't been happening. And we know, and I don't think did you talk about this in the last show? It was a long show. I'm not sure I got there yet.
What specifically?
About the post Mugello testing with him riding the other CRT.
Yes.
Bike.
Yeah. We talked about it.
Okay. Yep. I'll have to go back and
very quickly, it. Very quickly.
Yeah.
Because
anyway,
the problem is we didn't actually know which bikes he was on.
He was on 2, I believe.
Yeah. But the thing is that the times that we got at the time of the show were it's Yanni Hernandez, but we're not sure if it's actually Yanni Hernandez or Colin Edwards on that bike.
Right. Right. So, but that's a scoop. And so he was, they're looking. I don't think there's been any decision made. And frankly, we'll probably hear something. My guess is this week, because, Colin likes to talk and hell will be there.
Right. Right.
So I think we're going to be doing a lot of dragging stuff out of people this coming week, Jules.
Well, you are. Especially.
I do kind of dive in there, don't I?
I'm counting on you.
All right. What else we got?
We got in the same vein, I'm actually going to skip this Cameron one. We'll go back to that. Steve Reiling wrote in about electronics. He said, I've been confused about the issue of electronics. I keep hearing that standardized or reduced electronics will somehow make things cheaper. But I was also under the impression that fancy electronics has become a significant selling point on production bikes. If that's true, wouldn't manufacturers want to continue focusing on developing the electronics and racing and resisting limiting their use? And yeah, that's exactly correct. It's something that that's a big battle between MSMA and Dorna versus and plus IRTA because Dorna and to some degree IRTA and the FIM want to see closer racing that brings in the fans and stuff like that. MSMA wants to sell bikes, yeah. You know, primarily. And yeah, we may very well arrive at this really, really strange place where like the engines and the chassis are like, you know, made of fantastic materials and are way beyond anything of production, but the electronics are much better on production bikes than on these prototypes.
I don't know if we'll ever get quite there. I don't think that'll quite happen in MotoGP. That's my personal opinion. I think we'll still see some. I don't know if they're ever going to hit a truly spec ECU because I'm not sure if they can do it, Jules. Or if they can, you're right. It's going to be a big fight.
Well, so one of the things I was thinking about, because I'm really fascinated about this 3 years of freezing the engine spec, kind of like the main engine spec. And in a way, I could think, you know what? It could give them the time to design an ECU that works with all the different motors.
It could.
You know?
Sure. But then again, when you change the rules, and I mean, these ECUs are going to have to be provided by the series itself.
Yeah.
Something I want to point out, and to most people, you probably already know this, but the big cost factor that comes in for electronics, and there was actually a really good series on Road Racing World about this because there's a debate going on in the AMA in the United States, isn't the electronics themselves. Those are relatively pretty straightforward. It's the guys coding for them. It's the people that actually, data technicians, which actually work within the series and work with the teams, that understand and are able to interpret the data that comes out of these. You know, some of these setups tools, they've got, you know, 200 plus outputs. These guys are getting a lot of information, how to be able to translate that into written code to make the bike work the way that they want him. You know, one of the things you should do at Laguna Jules is you should actually geek out with Andrea for the show.
Well, Indy, he's not going to be at the Laguna.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay. At Indy.
Yep.
Just if nothing else, we'll use it as an extra or as an after show bit. For because I know there's some computer geeks out there that listen to this and we could completely chill.
I like that idea a lot.
I don't even know. Do you know what? Well, obviously they're going.
Andrew's not a programmer though. He's but I'm sure he understands a lot about that stuff.
I actually
looked into the kind of stuff that they do with the embedded stuff that they got, and you know it's not as sophisticated as you'd think actually.
Standard real-time OS?
Exactly. It's not embedded Java or anything fancy. It's pretty old school stuff.
So you're saying Andrea can only point and click. He can't raise up.
I think he knows a little bit more than that.
We're kidding you, Andrea. All right. So that's what I wanted to point out. The money that goes into these for the most part is the interpretation and skills of the guys that actually work on these black boxes. The electronics themselves are relatively stable and simple. I don't take it back. An addendum, if you will. The sensors in MotoGP land, and to some extent also in World Superbike and even the National Series, all of those 2D little bits cost bank.
Yes.
If you ever look at some of the naked pictures of, maybe I'll include a link to that for the Flickr account where I've got the old Yamaha stuff on there. And that's 5 years old, Jules, 2007.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's still, you look at it, you're like, holy cow. Pretty astonishing the amount of data they can pull back into these bikes. That is my little just aside there on it. Because I just want people to know that it's not all, you're not buying like some Uber Super Xbox, you know, 1080. Right. It's people that drive it. So where were we?
Let's go scroll up to Cameron Satinfield's email.
Scrolling. All right. I'll zip through this. It's from Cameron Satinfield. Something I heard made me stop in my tracks. Was that a pun, Cameron? Not sure. As you were responding to someone's statement regarding, paraphrase, Cal's desire for a factory ride to be so extreme that he would hamstring himself with a Ducati. Mm-hmm. I think, I know, an interesting choice of words. I think it may be a chess move on Cal's part if it shakes out just so. Well, arguably Yamaha's sole investment in Valley at this point would be to prove that it actually is the bike. I would expect Ducati to be right on their heels, taking the opportunity to do the same since there is nowhere for that team to go but up. Audi has a forceful racing pedigree, and the acquisition of Ducati in the first place has been attributed to pure megalomania by more than one person. I doubt the new management will settle for less than the top, and they literally have the deepest pockets in the world motorized right now. Cal sidles up at the right time to work with a Ducati who will be told what they will do to win rather than asked. Cal may be the first jockey on the deck that all the others wanted to hope and waited for. Now, Jules, you know that they kind of installed a new board at Ducati with at least a couple of Audi people on the board. Preziosi is still there, and as we know, he's kind of the guiding light for that project. What's going to happen? I don't know. But I think that they've got an injection. If I had to look at the silly season right now without going into too much depth or detail, and I've thought this for about the last 2 weeks, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of change. I have a feeling people are going to go, you know what? Let's just take a step back and remember, as we just said, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first year of the new formula. And let's get some laps under us before we make any drastic changes. So what I'm talking about is where people go. I expect to see drastic changes within the machinery itself. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of shuffling. I think we may have seen the major ones already. Now, that being said, there's a lot of guys that aren't signed right now, but that's not unusual for this time of year, right?
Yeah, totally. And we got totally, everybody got scooped by Ben Spies having fun expense with his little tweets about something big is going to happen at Laguna Seca and blah, blah, blah. Which of course just set up a storm everywhere. And, you know, I got suckered in because I just thought it would be fun to just discuss that stuff. I do enjoy it. I do enjoy the conjecture, even though it's ridiculous to try and.
Well, I think here's what happened this year. This year was a little bit unusual in that the frenzy kicked off when Jorge got signed early to us, right?
Yep.
And so,
then Casey Stoner retired.
Casey Stoner retired and it was on. And you and I know, and the fans out there that have been paying attention for a long time know, that nothing really happens till a summer break, traditionally, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And even sometimes until kind of Laguna, a little bit more.
Well, Laguna is before the summer break, actually, officially. It's just that we have some weird weeks here and there.
Yeah, we do. It's funny. I haven't even got my flight for Indy yet. And it's not out of any.
It's pretty soon, dude. It's a lot sooner than you think.
I know. Yeah, no, I need to grab it. I just getting set for this weekend, as you well know, and I well know. Yeah. I feel like this is my Mugello and as far as the complexity of it goes. But you're like, dude, trust me, it isn't. anyway, let's carry on. Did we fill in? Hopefully we filled in everything for you there, Cameron.
Well, I did want to point out that it's a very good point about Audi. The level of interest that they have in Ducati being a winning machine is very, very high.
Yeah.
But I think that the it's much more likely that the movement's going to be in the factory side than the writers.
True. You know, I read forums and I do all that stuff and I read around. There's a lot of people that still think it'll be interesting to get some feedback from Tech 3 or Tech 3 this week. I still don't see Bradley moving up to them. Do you?
Yeah, you know, so it's weird because at Magella it was said a couple of times that he does have a clause in his contract that's very specific that he will get a prototype ride.
So maybe the contract is winning out what the team might want.
I don't know what I mean. I haven't seen the contract.
Yeah, that's one thing we're rarely privy to, yeah. As in never. Anyway, we could, and we will chat endlessly about silly season as it really kicks into gear. Because right now, I think it's in first gear, or it's in a false neutral, if you will.
Nice.
Should I carry on?
Yes. Let's go down to Sam Dixon.
All right. Thank you for the direction, sir. Sam Dixon said on Facebook, he says, a fan's perspective on silly season regarding VR46. And here we go back into silly season, Jules.
And you thought you were done.
I did. As much as I would love to see Rossi on a Honda once again, I find myself hoping he stays with Ducati. For me personally, I think I'll have more respect for him if he stays and ultimately has success. I believe his legend will be helped if he stays with Ducati, more so than moving back to Yamaha/Honda to presumably win. Even if he stays with Ducati and doesn't markedly improve, I'd still have respect for him for not giving up. I believe he will win more races. Ducati will figure it out, in my humble opinion. I think there's a lot of people that agree with Sam. And we'll leave it at that. Should I carry on?
Yes.
Okay. Tony Cavadoro. Sorry, Tony, if I mangled your last name. Said on Facebook, he said, wondered about the comments from Mike Webb. Could it be that this approach of breeding safety into the riders through sanctions is a contributing factor in continually having great Moto 2 and Moto 3 followed by dull Moto GP? I kind of loved that segue. Yeah. Also, I kind of wonder about how evenly these are applied between the likes of, for example, Marquez and Zarco. Well, I think Mike kind of answered that with you, Jules.
He did. He's actually very... specifically pointed out it was Zarco in an email afterwards, and I actually did mention this last show, is that that every rider gets to start every year clean,
right?
You know, so yeah, there's going to be, I'm sure, some because it is a subjective kind of thing,
right?
The
clean sheet,
but the same people are around making decisions on penalties and stuff like that, and then they do remember incidents from previous years. So and there's no such thing as complete unbiased. So
people are people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's fine. I mean, just as long as it's mostly fair, and I think it's been mostly fair.
I like that.
You know. Yeah, I mean, you know, it obviously, it can't be fair to everybody, and but yeah, as long as things don't. I would hate to see things drag on a lot more than just having a decision made. You know.
Yeah. Well,
we can get back to racing instead of like appeals and all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of thing that would really worry me. But I think what Tony's point was, are the riders afraid of sanctions and stuff like that? That may be causing less aggressive maneuvers in MotoGP. I don't think so.
I do
think that those guys, basically, in order to get a ride in MotoGP, have to be pretty freaking mature. You know, they're not going to sign. Well, they did sign Marquez, but that was only because Casey Stoner retired. It would have been a very different story, I think, if it was. I think he would have stayed in Moto2 for another year. But anyway, because you look at guys like Jorge, before him, Marco Melandri, you know, guys who were wild. Not dangerous, truly, but mostly to themselves. But, you know, they needed to be kind of reined in. And Marco Simoncelli was another great example, you know, of somebody that learned. They after a couple of slaps on the hand, they were like, okay. And they were still exciting to watch. I mean, obviously, you know, Jorge Lorenzo is leading the championship. And when he wants to pass somebody... I mean, you know, the move he put on Danny in turn one at Magello, you know, that was not a pussy move.
By the way, I just realized I forgot to say it, but you did a damn good job, Magello, not only with the interviews, but with the photography. So everybody out there alongside with you, because I know you guys enjoyed it. Well done, Jules.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a dream come true. It was amazing. I'm still paying for it in terms of physical recovery.
Well, you only got a couple of days, so get your shit together.
I know. It's actually, I had to talk to a friend of mine who's a physical trainer about how the heck do I get over this, because I'm still kind of jet lagged, you know. Anyway, let's move on. I wanted to address the issue of spoilers because we got kind of and one of our listeners got very upset was it a photo that got posted? Yeah, it was a photo I posted of Moto 3 results.
Jules, can I preface this for you before you start?
Yes.
Okay. So Jules and I in the past have, and it's still there, and you can drop by if you want, ran a website, a forum called rideon2.com. And the forum is still there. We hang out all the time. And we have a very specific rule there because it's a rather small, very dedicated subset of people that is relatively controllable. That there was an absolute thing of no spoilers. Do not spoil. You put a spoiler in the title, we're basically going to hunt you down and kill you and your whole family. Not really, but that's what we feel like doing. Right. And okay, so that is our base position. However, as time has gone on and things like the Facebook, the face tubes, as we like to call it, and with some near 16,000 people following us and the entire rest of the internet, we can't control that.
We can't. And you know, the thing is that it's a totally different kind of thing because we made the community at Ride On 2, the community kind of decided on this.
Yeah.
A place that you can go to even on a race weekend and not have to worry about some idiot spoiling the results.
And I think it maybe happens once every couple of years. We got that thing pretty locked down there.
Very much so. Very much so. And you know, MotoGP.com has this great no spoilers video link where you can go and watch the races without seeing any news stories or anything like that.
And in fact, you know, we should include that URL again because some people would not remember it or they're new to the sport. So.
Yep. Good point. So.
Was that another beer?
But the thing is, no, that was actually a beer, but going the other way.
Oh.
but the thing is, on Facebook, it's a totally different thing. I mean, Facebook, Twitter, you have to, if you don't want the results, you have to stay off. Somebody's going to blow it for you. And it was that us that time, but it was going to be somebody else another time because they're going to say, my baby pooped its pants. And somebody else is going to say, Marco Melandri won such and such race, right? I mean, there's no way to avoid that because we share the things that we love on Facebook. You know?
Well, and we're, that's one of our places to be pretty much live. That being said, Jules, I do want to go ahead and say to, and I don't remember the gentleman's name that pointed that out, I do want to say sorry.
Yeah. No, I did. I apologize to him as well.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel bad, but just a word to the wise, if you're going to come on the Facebook fan page.
Internet blackout, man.
Yeah.
Just do internet blackout until you, if you don't want the results, you have to do it yourself.
Personally, I, as in the guise of what we do, Jules, I've given up completely. I mean, I either watch it live or I get spoiled when I get up and that's all there is about it because my email, I can't even check my email because I've got, you know, 300 press releases.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Yeah. So, I was doing pretty good with it until about 4 years ago. And then it was just like, oh no, this ain't working. So just, but that being said, I understand other people are different.
Yep.
We've got MotoGP coming up and there is a little bit of news and I think we should talk about that.
Yeah. The big news of course is that Hector Barbera, was it yesterday or Sunday?
I think it was Sunday.
He was doing some, practicing on the little dirt bike and had a bad fall and broke his left fibula. And he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, which means he definitely misses Laguna Seca and probably is going to miss Indy. And it really is a bummer for him because he didn't have a great race at Magello, but he was on the front row. And And I know he likes coming to Laguna Seca. And the weird thing is that he has a second rider in the team, has a second rider in case he's not able to race, and that's Kenny Noyes. But Kenny Noyes is not actually going to be riding at Laguna Seca. It's going to be Tony Elias.
Yeah. You always say Elias. I always thought that was
Elias. Elias. Yeah. Elias. Yeah.
Not that I ever wanted to correct you, but I was like, huh. I know. Anyway, sorry, I'm goofing around. Yes. And so Tony's going to be there now. Is we well know, I think it was Tony's had two podiums on the, was it Misano and where else?
Brno.
Yeah, Brno.
Well, this is back in like, you know, 2007.
Or eight.
I think. 2008, maybe. Yeah. He had a it was 2008. And he also has had good results at Laguna on the Desmos Sedici. He had a sixth in 2009, seventh in 2008. I remember the seventh in 2008 specifically because our friend Liam Schubert was of course on the team, and right. He was so stoked because they beat Ben Spies, and you know, it was knows the track very, very, very well. Anyway, yeah, Tony made an amazing last lap in that race. So I remember that was a really big deal.
And I thought it was pretty cool today, this afternoon, or this evening, actually. I popped into Twitter and it was stuff that had been going on earlier today. But Tony was teammates with Sylvain Guintoli for a while, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I saw Sylvain wish him, Tony, a great race and have a good race at Laguna. And I thought that was pretty cool given his circumstances right now. Although we'll have some news on. Well, you know what? We'll save that. no, we won't. Well,
because we're done with MotoGP news. Laguna Seca this weekend. It's just MotoGP. Obviously, Moto 2, Moto 3 are not coming to Laguna Seca, but they will be at Indy.
Yep.
We talked about the meetup. My prediction is that either Casey Stoner, Danny Pedrosa, or Javier Llorente are going to win the race.
All right. Well done. And my prediction is it's either going to be 60 or 106.
Yep.
I'm hoping for a nice middle ground. I've been watching the weather, Jules, and it looks like it's always hard to tell because you can't look at Monterey. You really can't look at other stuff. But so far, it looks like it's trending towards only being about 10 degrees warmer than the coast, which would put us in about the lower 80s.
Not bad. Not bad. I'll take that.
I'll take a middle ground. I woke up this morning to rain here at the end of July.
Whoa.
And then it got up to 95 today. I mean, talk about your Midwestern weather, although we didn't get tornadoes, but we had, you saw this thing I sent you today.
Yeah.
Last night, ladies and gentlemen, we had 571 lightning strikes in the surrounding area to me, which lit off at this point something like 25 forest fires.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go to the ocean where it's relatively safe.
You can always jump in.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to World Superbike. Jules, I mentioned to you, I haven't had a chance to watch all this, so you're going to be the driving force. And we were talking about very briefly prior to this, Tony Liss, who partnered with Sylvain Guintoli on the Pramac Ducati, or was it Pramac or Alice back then?
Alice.
And so let's talk about Sylvain, because he got sort of, well, I don't know if there's any other way to put it, but pretty freaking rudely punted, or not punted, but dissolved with the Team Effenberg Liberty Racing squad.
One of the weirdest things, actually, explain the sequence of events.
Yeah, well, they Sylvain posted, I believe, on Twitter first, yep. Because his team and the bike was not going to be at Brno, that he wasn't going to be racing for Team Liberty Racing, Team Effenberg Liberty Racing, and that he was immediately available for other jobs. And so the speculation, Jules, fired up really fast prior to Barbera, prior to Elias being announced that perhaps Ginters might get a hitch on that bike,
yep.
Which would have been appropriate, I thought. Instead, they chose Elias as teammate, which was also appropriate. And so right after that, there was a press release from the team.
I like the way you said this to me. You said they shouldn't have bother sending this kind of press release. It just makes things so much worse.
Yeah, well, they sent one out that was kind of mild, and it was short.
Yeah.
And then 4-something hours later, something must have crawled up their craw, because they sent one out that was... And they've never been super good at writing press releases. They've had some that you just kind of went, huh? But this one was pretty bad.
Yeah, yep.
And they did a little coal raking, and... Frankly, it pissed a lot of people in the race community off. And that combined with...
Well, specifically, for those who haven't seen it, they said that one of the reasons that they were breaking the relationship with Guentoli is poor performance, which is ridiculous, because Guentoli is having a fantastic season for them. He's put them on the podium. I mean, Right. Come on.
Yep. And I think that sort of weirdness combined with what happened at Monza with the team and what happened at Silverstone after that, with them not bringing their hospitality and putting out other challenging letters to the series promoters, has really kind of got people going, well, what the hell? Now, that being said, they had, and I want to give them something back without, you know, completely slamming the team. They went super ambitious this year. They had a 4-rider team, Jules.
Yeah.
We talked a lot with Brett McCormick earlier in the season. He's not returning my texts right now because I'm curious. It was very promising. And they had a great start to the year, and they had some really good performances and some solid guys on the team. I mean, you know, Kuba's been qualifying extremely well. Well, no surprise there. But also running pretty well in some of these races.
Yes.
Sven's been doing a great job. Berger is constantly a surprise, and not so much of late, but earlier in the season was doing really well. And we're all kind of waiting for Brett to come back, but now there's kind of a big question mark hanging over the team. And I think that's mostly of their own doing. Now, is it once again the economy? Probably. Effenberg was putting an awful lot of money into the team. Maybe they're not so happy right now. We'll have to see. But I don't think it was handled very well. In the meantime, the good news for at least one of the parties involved is Sylvain Guentoli has been picked up. And I think we all thought this was going to happen, or at least I kind of did, by the Petit Ducatio squad. And he will definitely be at Silverstone. So stoked for him, stoked for that team. That's a good bike, Jules.
It is. It is a great team, too.
Yep. And so, we like Sylvain, bottom line.
Absolutely. Great guy and great racer.
A Frenchman that actually calls himself a frog. You gotta kind of like that. So Sylvain, best to you. I hope that ride continues on throughout the season, and we'll talk to you soon. I look forward to it. Love to hear and see what you do on the Pat to Bike. Jules, take it away. World Superbike qualifying. The weather was weird, wasn't it?
It was. And I will warn everybody that we're going to kind of rush through this, even though the racing was good, because this is Laguna Seca week, and we got to get the stuff in the can. But yes, it was a very strange weekend where there were passing rain showers that dumped water onto the track, and then hot weather would come back and dry the thing out. So that happened once during one of the free practices. Then there was a dry free practice. But during qualifying, the first the Super Pole 2,
yeah, 3
or 3, I'm sorry,
yep,
was dry. Super Pole 2 was dry. Max Biaggi gambled on Super Bowl 2, saving both his qualifiers for one in Super Bowl.
Oops.
And he didn't make the time. So he ended up starting 14th, which is on the fourth row, which is, you know, this is his one of his favorite tracks and has been very good to him in the past. I think he's won here like 4 or 5 times in Superbikes. And of course, in several times in MotoGP.
Yep.
And then it started to pour, which meant that they had to switch to the wet qualifying rules, which is just one session. So there were 12 guys that threw on some wets and qualified. And we had Tom Sykes, surprise, surprise, on pole, the seventh time now, seventh pole. Carlos Checa second, Laverty, Giuliano, who was looking incredible the entire weekend, showing off Checa until qualifying pretty much. Second row was Belandri, Ray, Haslam, Fabrizio. And third was Davies, Smertz, Salom, and Artin Bardavidi. Along with Biagi on the fourth row was Camier.
Loris Baz.
Loris Baz, yes, and John Hopkins.
Okay, and so Baz qualified behind Biagi, but as it turned out, that wasn't necessarily a bad place to qualify.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had the Superstock race. I didn't watch it, but I was just apparently at the very end of the Superstock race, it started pouring. And the track was super wet, but again, it stopped raining. And there was a very good point that Neil Hodgson was one of the commentators. He made a really good point, which is that the track is drying. It's going to be dry in 10 to 15 minutes. Just postpone the race. The race by those 10 minutes, because right now those guys have to go out there on slicks because they know it's going to be drying because the rain stopped and it's basically blue skies.
Yep.
But it's going to be treacherous for the first few laps. But they didn't postpone it, and sure enough, it was one of the weirdest starts of the race I've ever seen. The bikes were, you know, like Tom Sykes was taking outside lines. Some people were taking inside lines. Basically, whenever there was a dry pass, they would go for it. Mm-hmm. The lap times were 30 seconds off their dry times during free practice.
I bet I could have run those.
Yeah, exactly. Although maybe not in the wet.
Yeah.
With the wet spots. But also 20 seconds slower than the Superstocks were running in the wet. So right. Just ridiculous. Just really ridiculous. And it took about 4 or 5 laps before a dry line formed on the racing line and they could get to some proper racing. But in the meantime, Sykes took a big lead. He was leading by about 3 seconds. And
cut up by Giuliani.
Yep. And Berger caught him, and Giuliani then crashed. And Berger went past him, and it was very surprising. And then it turned out that he was actually running cut slicks, and that's why he was able to do really, really well for the first half of the race.
So cut slicks or an intermediate?
Well, you know, they called them cut slicks on the broadcast.
I'm gonna assume it was an intermediate.
But I think you're right. I think because
Pirelli, I don't think they're allowed to cut their slicks.
Yeah, I think that Pirelli brings three types of tires.
They do. Yep.
Let's see. So Sykes took over from Berger, and Berger just slid back after it started really dry. And meanwhile, Biagi was still in 10th, way back there. Not struggling, keeping up, but about, I think, 7-8 seconds off of Sykes. And then we had we had a crazy crash between Mercado and IM on the front straight. I think it was on a straight. Actually, I think it was the downhill part of the track.
Oh, yeah, the same place that Smertz had a real spectacular get-off. That's not a good place to go off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think they both did end up okay.
They ended up okay, but Mercado got caught, you know, under the bike with Ayama. Actually, Ayama didn't crash. He kind of ran off and then went off in the dirt. And we didn't see the incident, but afterwards I read somewhere that Ayama put a pass on Mercado and caught him by surprise by basically doing kind of a block pass.
Yeah.
That's what caused Mercado to go down, and then they both kind of tangled. But both walked away. It was great. They were fine. But the guy that was really starting to get the rhythm going was Melandri. Melandri was round 6. He was fighting with Haslam. He put some hard moves on Haslam that we talked about quite a bit later on. And then finally caught with Sykes, who was not fading this time. He was not fading.
And the tires look good.
And the tires look good, exactly, even at the end of the race. Now, the commentary was that this was because the first 6 or 7 laps were wettish.
Sure.
You know, so but as we see in Superbike Race 2, it turns out that maybe they did figure something out, or maybe just the track suited the way the Kawasaki delivers power. But anyway, Sykes was great. doing great, but Melandri was amazing. And Tom made a slight mistake at the bottom of the hill again, same area that we were talking about earlier. And Johnny Ray, the master of like, ooh, somebody went wide. I'm going in. he snuck inside of Tom. Tom was coming back into the racing line, and hit Ray, and Ray had a very nasty crash.
I believe as Neil Hodgson would say, that was the first weasel of the day.
Yes, yeah, I believe he actually did say exactly that.
That was a race two.
Oh, okay. it was because it was crazy when they showed the shot from Johnny Ray's bike. You could see the rider's helmet right there, so that was scary. But Johnny Ray got up and was fine. I was pissed. You know, I don't know who, you know. This is one of those incidents where like I heard a lot of people saying, well, you know, Ray sticks his. Who the hell isn't going to stick into a spot like that, you know?
I'm pretty sure, Jules, that the ultimate arbiters of what is and isn't correct is when the riders involved with something agree with each other on that it was one of those things and the rest of us should just shut the hell up.
Yep. And that's exactly what they did.
Yep. So, okay, you guys are cool with it, then we're cool with it too.
Yeah, well said. Good job, Checa, you know, avoiding hitting Ray. It did cost him a position, which he did not recover, which meant that Loris Baz ended up on podium. So we had both Kawasaki's from Kawasaki Racing Team on the podium. Melandri won by 1.3 seconds. And then it was Sykes, Baz, Checa, Laverty. Biaggi did finally start making some moves, ended up sixth. So it wasn't total disaster for him. Haslam, Fabrizio, Berger did manage to stay in the top 10. Smertz, and so on down.
Is this when I get to go? Yay.
Yay. Well, we had race two. We'll do World Superbikes race two and then talk about Super Sport.
All right.
Race two, great. This was completely dry. No issues there. Biaggi had a great start. Sex had a great start. Laverty had a great start.
You did. And, you know, I was looking for Laverty to go in front because he's really good at doing that. Going into the first corner, and Sykes got a brilliant start. I mean, right off the line, he already had like two or three bike lengths. I'm like, holy shit, man, they've got something put together on that bike.
Yeah. And he kept that lead, you know, that this is kind of growing to about 2 seconds for a while.
Exactly.
It was amazing. Actually, you know what? It was in this race that Melandri had that nasty pass on Haslam that, I think they had a little chat about afterwards because they were going up the hill, and he put that move on him and forced Haslam off the line. Dangerously off the line where he could have gotten off the track. Right. You know, and you know, it's racing, and I I didn't see anything that was outrageous, but I could see why Haslam was upset.
Well, and as Hutchinson also said, the things that you do to your teammate are slightly, you know, they okay. So this is a contradiction in philosophy, but it's one of those hypocrisies that we kind of live with in the race world. Okay. The first person that you want to beat is your teammate. At the same time, there is also a unwritten yet seriously hardcore thing that is that you don't run your teammate off the track. You're going to beat him fair and square. And I think that's kind of what Neil was getting at. He wasn't too pleased with it, but then again, he's one of those guys that's able to get on and move past. So, it was clear that after that happened that Leon was riding really aggressively trying to get back to the front, but his podium efforts were, they were going to be pretty tight at that point.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of competition because there was a lot of guys that were putting in an amazing race.
I love watching races from Brno. It's just such a neat looking track.
Isn't it though? Yeah. Fuck, man, it's such a good track. I mean, there are camera angles that they were showing at the Superbike race where I remember standing exactly in that spot when I was there in 2010 for the GP, and it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful, beautiful place, and what an amazing racetrack for racing. I mean, you know,
sure, and frankly, it's one of the ones that I think is probably best covered from camera angles, both in MotoGP and World Superbike. It just seems like they've got perfect venues to, or locations to actually pick that up. You're like, really? Wow.
Well, you know what it is? There's no structures around the place.
Right.
So they could, they just build out towers and stick the cameras wherever they need to, you know?
Very, very cool. So carrying on. Go.
Well, basically, you know, we had Melange caught Sykes and passed him, and it looked like, oh, God, you know, he's going to go away. But he made a small mistake, and then they had a great battle for the last few laps. And Sykes was not giving up, giving in, and the bike lasted. It was great. Great to see that either figure something out, or maybe... Now, from what I understand, the surface at Brno is one of the least damaging to the tires. So maybe that had something to do with the longevity that that Tom got out of the Kawi. But maybe they figured something out.
Yeah, it's a combination of basically a little bit less abrasive, but not. It's a very flowing track.
Mm-hmm.
With only a couple of exceptions, you don't have like this completely bonsai breaking.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's think only two corners that you take in, you know, less than a third gear, you know?
Yeah, one of which cut out eventual winner. are we ready to run down through all the names yet, or you want to continue on through?
No, well, that's it. So Melange did win despite
nearly crashing twice in the same corner.
Yep, exactly. Giving BMW the first double.
Yeah, and you know that's pretty significant if you think about it, Jules.
Because last year they haven't even won a race yet.
Well, yeah, and I want to let's take us back to the year before. When everybody was like, "Oh, okay, it's a neat bike, it's quick." They clearly have electronics issue. Corser and who was the teammate back then? It was Smertz, right? Corser and Smertz.
No. It was.
It was Smertz was in there.
Nah, really?
Yeah, it was.
Smertz was at a BMW?
I'm pretty sure. Yes, he was, because remember that huge, massive crash that he had at Brno 2 years ago, going down that hill?
Hmm.
I think.
Mm. No, I don't think so, dude. I don't think it was Smertz. Here we go. Google time.
Well, I do remember Smertz had a huge, massive crash going down that hill. Whether or not it was on a BMW, maybe up for debate.
I don't remember the last time that Smertz has not been on a Ducati, dude.
Oh, I think you could be right. Damn it. I hate it when you're right. Anyway, those guys struggled the first year. And obviously, you know, it's a brand new superbike, right? I mean, give me a break. And they're stepping into the world stage for production, semi-production.
It was Chaus.
Okay. That was, I was thinking of a crasher, and frankly, Smertz isn't so much. They both have four letters, and they're strangely spelled in each of them. Right. I'm sorry, Ruben, nothing personal. And that was a huge crash. They're coming along. They're third year in World Superbike, and they've just done a double win, and the bike's selling very well at a decent price point. So, I mean, yeah. Fucking A, man. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's what we could hope for, Jules, is to have new manufacturers coming in.
Not only a new manufacturer, but a manufacturer that has never produced a bike quite like that before. You know, they I mean, it's a straight four BMW race bike from, you know, the future. I mean,
which is now.
Well,
I know what
it
you
still
mean.
Looks like it's from the future. Looking bike.
That's because somebody took a styling cue and said, okay, let's make an asymmetric fairing.
Yeah.
And I remember when it first came out, people are like, oh, it's ugly. And I'm like, who gives a frick? The thing's going to be hauling ass. I'm definitely
All the specs that they had about that bike was just like mind-blowing at the time, you know?
So if anybody's wondering out there, I am absolutely one of those function over form fans. So you can hand me the ugliest race bike, but if it's fast as shit, I don't care. I will bust out a spray can and I will disguise it.
Why?
Frankly, I don't care. It doesn't, a bike to
no,
me
no,
doesn't.
No, no, no. I mean, then why disguise it if you don't care? You're contradicting yourself there, Jim.
I never do that, Jules. The point being, Anyway, I always hear you see a new model come out and you hear people going, "Oh, that's ugly."
Yeah.
You know, but it's got all this whiz bang shit on it. And I'm like, well, who cares? It's going to be a damn good bike. You're not going to buy one because you don't like the way it looks. Well, how much of a race bike do you see when you're on the track? Really? You know?
Well, I mean, people buy motorcycles for many different reasons besides just racetracks. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, a double for BMW, which is fantastic, and a double for Melandri, which is fantastic because it was Melandri, Sykes, and Checa got third, so he got on the podium. Biaggi fourth. Go ahead.
A double for us, which was fantastic because we got Manuelo's celebrations.
Oh, yeah. The lineup, the kissing lineup.
Yes, indeed. Go on.
And then Laverty Davies, who had a good race. Haslam. Baz again, decent finish. Camier, Fabrizio. I think Ray, who was looking really good all weekend, was either banged up or just.
No, he got in a tussle with.
That's what I think. I think he went off the he actually went off the track again, right?
Yep, he did.
Okay, yeah. So he ended up in 12th. Hopper had another kind of crappy weekend. He scored. He was 15th in the first race and what? And 14th in the second. Meh.
Yeah. Points at least.
Well, yeah, I know, but he loves this track and he's had some great results this track. So that was kind of a bummer.
Yep.
I wanted to point out, you know, because Dom Sykes is, after this race, we got Biaggi just 21 points ahead of Melandri, and Sykes is in third in the championship with 59 points behind Biaggi, 38 behind Melandri. But I wanted to point out, Dom Sykes has led 102 laps this season, which is by far the most, because next up is Checa with 61, which is interesting because he's fourth, but that's because the reason why he probably led less is because he crashed. Biaggi's only led 58, you know. Jair Rey is fourth with 29. Melandri only 24 laps led. He really comes on at the end. So, you know, if they really did figure out their shit, Tom Sykes could be a huge force for the rest of the season, and things could change.
Well, to be fair, I think the fact that they pulled off such impressive finishes, both in the semi-wet and in the dry this weekend, makes part two of this season look pretty strong. And
well, we're actually two thirds of the way through the season, so there's not this.
That's true. It does start a bit early.
Four rounds left. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, we knew the Kawi at the beginning of the season was going to be good.
Yep.
And it's as time has gone on, development has improved, and things are changing on the bike, and they're getting new fiddly bits and to bolt onto it and to make things work. And the team is, you know, coming together.
Yeah.
He may not necessarily be a contender for the title this year unless something really weird happens, but. I would not count them out at all last year or next year. And I would not be surprised if you saw more Kawis on the grid next year.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. It wouldn't bother me at all, would it, Jules?
No. No.
All right. Speaking of Kawis.
Yeah. Let's go to Super Sports. So Super Sports qualifying, I did not watch it, but Sofuaglu was a pole with Cluzel, Foray, Parks for company. That already sounds like a nice bash up.
Yes, it does.
Sam Lowes was in fifth with Iannuzzo, Quarmby, and Baldolini for company. And then Moraes, Cruciani, Gabor Talmasi, and Victor Debis. The race itself was it started exactly like the Aragon race. We had a crash at the start on the grid. I believe it was Roccoli who flipped his bike or something. And so the race was immediately red flagged. Everybody had to come back in. It was not a terrible delay. There was actually some worry because there was this weird moment where Foray's bike leaned way, way over as he was, looking down or whatever. Like, you know how they check their position,
right?
And somebody said that maybe something spilled out of the bike, but that was totally not true. And also Rockley was starting nowhere near where Foray was starting. So anyway,
could have had a bit of cheese falling out of his leathers.
Love it.
Oh, shit.
There's a guy who would not call himself a frog. So the race was red flagged. They did do a very fast turnaround. It didn't get delayed horribly. Guys came back on the grid, restart, and it was not a great race. I was like watching it for about 8 laps, thinking, you know, I remember World Super Sport races were really, really amazing.
They were the Moto 2 of their day.
Yeah, but Foray was just like pulling away, and I was like, man. And you know, Sofwagel was in second, and there was a big gap to Parks, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be a kind of a weak race. But I don't know what happened to Foray, but Sofwagel and Parks started to catch him. They started to bounce up again, and I was like, oh okay, maybe we got some good racing that will happen. And sure enough, we did. There's a lot of green bikes in Super Sport, and I'm like losing track sometimes, you know.
There were a lot of green bikes on the podium this weekend. Period. I was pretty pleased about that whole thing.
I bet.
Yeah. Let's run down the top 24 year real quick. The Ferret, Sofwagel, Parks.
Wait. Hang on.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on.
Sorry.
We had a
oops.
Very. What happened is that Superglue.
Oh my god, you did it.
Yeah, I did it. So Sofwagel passed Foray with 5 laps to go, but this is very critical. He passed him going into turn one, and then the race then they went on for another almost 2 laps, but there was a crash right in the middle of the track. Quarmby crashed, and because the bike was left on the track, he actually ran off from the bike, but I think he was so winded that he lay back down on the track, and they red flagged it.
Yep.
So it being more than 2/3 of the race being done, the race was over, and of course, Sofwagel, having led for more than a lap, he thought he was celebrating, and this now is the second time in a row where he's celebrating a win, and he actually even came to Parc Fermé and parked the bike in the number one spot, but it turned out that the Russian rider Pozniev did not complete that lap on which Sofwagel was leading at the start.
Yep.
So they had to go back to the previous lap, which is the one where they finished with Foray leading, and Sofwagel passed him just immediately after that point. So Sofwagel was actually second, and Foray got the win. And he was very surprised. They were all very surprised, including, you know, the teams were just looking at the screens, and they were just like, what? Really?
Yeah. Different reactions and levels of surprise.
Yeah. So I was really, really pissed about it. And I was, before the show, I was checking the FIM regulations on this, because Quarmby got sixth position. In the standings, in the final standings of the race. So it was Foray, Sofwagel, Parks. And Parks was, by the way, also very upset, because he was actually catching Sofwagel and Foray, and he looked like he with 5 laps to go, he could have actually taken them both and maybe gotten his win. Obviously, so that didn't happen. But so those three guys, then Sam Lowe's fourth, Huzel fifth, and Quarmby was sixth, even though he was the one who caused the crash. And I thought that if you cause the crash, you get swept off the thing. But there's nothing in the rule book about that. The only thing they have in there is that you have
to be able to return to the pits. Something like that, isn't it? Oh, no, that's for a restart.
That's for a restart, exactly. For a restart, there's nothing about the race being red flagged and then being in the end. And that's, I think, kind of messed up. Because, man, what does that mean? It's 2/3 into the race.
I'm leading.
I'm just gonna lay this sucker down right in the middle of the track.
I'm pretty sure, Jules, that ain't gonna happen.
No, I know, but it's a weird thing.
Yeah,
it's very strange to see him in the sixth. Anyway, so for the championship standings, that means that Foray got bumped up to 2 points, and he's now only 6 points behind Sam Lowe's. So Sofwagel is 23 points ahead of Lowe's, and that's obviously a lot more meaningful in Super Sport, but there's still 4 rounds, 5 rounds actually.
Yeah, I mean, something was pointed out And that should be interesting to explore, but will never happen, is the fact that World Superbike has two races per round, whereas World Supersport only has one race per round.
Yeah.
So guys have a little bit more opportunity to reverse catastrophic issues in World Superbike, but World Supersport, you got one and go. So
there's one that's very hard to reverse, which is a shitty qualifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to deal with it twice.
Unless, of course, you get whacked out with her, and then it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah.
I mean, Baz came from that position of, what, 13th in qualifying to finish second on the box, his first podium?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
third, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Very cool. All right. That's all. That's all I got.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, folks. We'll talk to you later. All right. Just a reminder for all of you out there, if you're coming to Laguna Seca, please, if you'd like a sticker, which are rushing on their way here from Chicagoland, I believe, many thanks again. Once again, for my late order to, Chris Grizel from jimpinouette.com, we will have stickers, and I said, be creative if you'd like. So Jules, ooh, we never know what we're going to get.
Nice.
And those will be delivered to us at the track. I always like that. He did that last year too.
I'm going to bring some Italian stickers because I've got a bunch left. I did forget to mention actually last week that I stuck a lot of those things on people's bikes at the Track Invasion. So
okay, so now I have to ask you if you did so.
What's that?
Did you take photos of them when they were on their bikes?
I do have a photo of one. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We will have stickers, ladies and gentlemen. I think I'm actually going to have an extra shirt with me, which has been completely a non-starter. What I may do is wear it because I don't have a lot. And then we may do something goofy and give it away at the meetup, which we're going to have at 4:20 p.m. on Saturday, which they'll be running Superbike qualifying at that time. That is right at the... it's between turns 4 and 5, down from the parking lot, the press parking lot that leads up to the Corkscrew right near the TV Media Center. If you can't find us or you get confused or you're a lost little child, please post on Facebook. I'll have my phone with me and I can check there and see if you're lost. Or look to Christina Sua for a tour guide to try and find your way there.
Oh,
I'm brutal, aren't I?
Oh, man. I love it.
We may have some special guests too. We shall see. And I'll leave it at that in a very cryptic comment. Jules, I'm really looking forward to this, even though the logistics have been a bit of a nightmare, but I think it's all going to come together. And we'll be hanging out with the Grice brothers, by the way. Todd and Nick, we're running in Supersport AMA. We're going to have TTXGP/ePower stuff going on. And of course, all the cool MotoGP racing and as many interviews as we can get before we collapse into a small puddle on the floor. I think I'm done now, Jules. Did I close that off with enough information?
I think so. I'm kind of breathless.
All right. Well,
all right. So everybody who's coming, see you there and tune in next week. We're going to have some good stuff for you.
I hope so. Either that or we're going to just be a smaller puddle on the floor.
Nice.
Cool. Ciao, everybody. And thanks for listening, downloading, and we'll talk to you soon.
Night, Jim. Ciao. Good night.